In 2018, a high-profile 9-week rape trial took place in Belfast involving a young woman and 4 men, including the then Ulster rugby players Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding. All 4 defendants were found not guilty on all charges, but the publicity and discussion surrounding the trial led to 2 reviews of how the judicial system deals with serious sexual assault cases. The first of these reviews focused on the Northern Ireland judicial system and provided more than 250 recommendations. The second of these reviews focused on the Republic's judicial system, and that's been published today. It makes 50 recommendations on how the judicial system could change. And to discuss that in more detail, Helen McEntee, the Minister for Justice, is here in studio. Yeah. Minister, the issue of anonymity was one that there was much debate about in the wake of the Belfast rape trial. Now, the rules in Northern Ireland are different, and here there is anonymity for the complainant and the accused unless convicted. But what this review recommends, some changes in this regard. Can you talk us through those?
It does, and as you've outlined, this is a report that really followed on from what was a very high profile case where there was concern around the experiences, in particular vulnerable witnesses, but also Tom O'Malley, who was the author of this report, was asked to look at the experiences of vulnerable witnesses going through investigations and prosecutions for sexual offences. And I think the report is very welcome. It very positively and very much so focuses on the victims here and making sure that we can put in place a system whereby victims of sexual assault, victims of sexual crimes, know what information is available to them, supports that are available to them, but most importantly, that if they come forward, that they will be listened to, that they will be heard, that they will be treated with respect and dignity, and that they will be supported through what is a very difficult process. It's also important that we get to a point whereby somebody who commits a sexual crime knows that they will be reported, because we will support the victim to do so, that they will be investigated and they will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, and these recommendations I think go a long way in helping us get to that point, and it's important now that we move to implement them. The specific point that you've outlined there, and I think we have to go back to the fact that yes, there are different jurisdictions here and there are different measures in place, and if this trial had taken place in the in this jurisdiction, we maybe wouldn't have seen or heard of a lot of what happened or went on, but we have to remember, and the very cornerstone of our justice system is that you are innocent until proven guilty. And we have a situation whereby if somebody is accused of rape, the anonymity applies not just to the victim, but also to the defendant. And I think what the recommendation here is suggesting is that victims of sexual assault, and if you look at aggravated assault, it carries the same penalty if found guilty as rape. There is that same social stigma attached to somebody. And we've seen again in recent times where somebody has been accused of sexual assault, later acquitted, and obviously that stigma follows them. So the recommendation is that this would be extended not just to that it remains at rape, but would be extended to sexual assault. But again, this is a recommendation. This is something that I have to, and working with the various different NGOs, with the various different stakeholders, have to reflect on. And my plan is over the next 10 weeks that we will put in place a very clear implementation plan, taking on board the recommendations, taking on board the views of victims groups, NGOs, the legal profession, the judiciary, and indeed colleagues of mine who I'll work with as well, to put in place a plan to implement these recommendations.
So how long before people would see a difference in the court settle?
Well, there are some recommendations in saying that I hope to move on very quickly. So working on legislation to introduce what would be a preliminary trial hearing. One of the biggest concerns that we've heard from the various different victims groups is the delays that consistently happen in actually getting to trial, and what the preliminary trial hearing would do is hopefully address a lot of the concerns and agree a lot of areas before it even gets to trial. We also want to look at, and this is an area that has already progressed, introducing and making sure that we have all of the specialist divisional units for the Garda Síochána in place. 17 out of the 27 are currently there, and we are hoping to have the remainder of those in place by September. There's also a recommendation, but one that I will act on immediately with my colleague in Minister in Higher Education, a recommendation around education, particularly actually focusing on consent, not just in our schools and universities, but a more general basis. Then there are obviously, as you mentioned, 50 recommendations focusing on everything from training with An Garda Síochána, the legal profession, the judiciary, to make sure that from the very outset, from the moment a vulnerable witness or a victim comes into contact with somebody, that they are in a position to support them, that they know the information, that the legal support that's available to them, and that they can work with them and support them throughout this entire process. So there's a lot of things we can move on immediately. There's some that will require legislation, some will require funding, and I think maybe just to point on one specific area, and this is something that has been called for, and this is around legal support and advice for vulnerable victims. What I hope to do is immediately engage with the Legal Aid Board, and what we hope to set out based on the recommendations from Tom O'Malley is a system whereby from the very outset a victim of a sexual crime or a vulnerable witness can have access to legal advice, because what we've actually found is that there's a huge amount of legislation, there's a huge amount of information there, but it's not all available, it's not all known. We need to pull it together to put it into a single portal so that anybody can access it, but most importantly the people who need it most are the vulnerable witnesses.
Can I ask you about another issue that's part of your brief, the issue of direct provision? NPHET have expressed concern about the number of outbreaks of COVID-19 in these settings. There's been 21 involving 235 people. Five of those were told remain an issue. There's been four new clusters involving 47 new cases in recent weeks. What are you doing to tackle this?
So we know that there has been an increase in recent days, and I think positively we've been able to identify, because of the increased and the very targeted way in which we are now testing and contact tracing, we know where they have come from. We know, I suppose, the workplace where a lot of it has originated from, and we have moved to isolate and to ensure that those who have tested positive, but also those who have come in close contact with them, have been able to self-isolate as well. From the very outset, and I suppose it's important to say that we have, and my Department and Justice have always worked with the HSC, with NPHET, with the Department of Health to put in place measures that will protect people in direct provision. We have identified 850 beds throughout this entire process, which has allowed us, where necessary, to allow people to self-isolate, people over 65 in direct provision to be able to self-isolate, those who have underlying conditions or health requirements that need to do so. But we have also tried to make sure, and we have made sure that within the direct provision centres information is available, that it's translated where necessary as well, but that in the same way that I am and you are being asked to adhere to public health guidelines, to socially distance, to apply the same type of public health guidelines, that information has been getting across as well. But obviously, look, we are very conscious that there has been a number of clusters and outbreaks, but we have moved very quickly to support and to work with these people and to try and make sure that they can isolate as quickly as possible.
And we heard from Masai earlier in the programme, who were talking about the difficulties of isolation. They're saying, you know, while there is the facility for people to go, they still have to come back to very cramped and crowded conditions. As the winter progresses, as the numbers rise, are you concerned, or are you looking at other ways of accommodating people in the shorter term?
Well, this, I think, moves into the much broader picture and the larger question around direct provision. And obviously, there is a commitment in the programme for government to move away from that type of system. We obviously have a lot of people in emergency accommodation at the moment as well. I suppose the objective is to try and remove them from emergency accommodation as quickly as possible, that people, where possible, can be in their own accommodation, turnkey accommodation, where they, you know, you have family units that can live independently, where they can access their own home through their own door, where they're not sharing rooms.
But that's,
and this
the
is the type of system.
Short term, what can we do?
Well, you know, we have been moving to remove people from emergency accommodation in recent weeks, and we'll continue to do so moving into the winter as well. But it's important to understand that we're not going to be able to remove direct provision centres overnight or by the end of this year or by Christmas as we come into the winter, as you say. So what we are doing is working with public health officials to make sure that the correct measures are put in place so that people can socially distance, that they can isolate, and that absolutely where necessary that they can be moved if that's what required.
NPHET wants fortnightly testing for people living in direct provision. Will that happen across the board?
Well, we've seen how we've been able to increase our testing capacity over the last number of months, and we have always been guided by NPHET and by the public health officials, so we will work with them, of course, if this is something that they're recommending.
We've heard stories of people who've availed of the isolation areas, particularly people who live in healthcare, or sorry, who work in healthcare, who've needed to isolate for those reasons, people who are medically vulnerable, going to another accommodation, but still having to return for things like washing and food and that kind of thing. Has that issue been resolved?
Well, again, I'm very conscious that this is a very difficult situation, and, you know, direct provision in itself is not the type of system that we want to remain, and this is why we're moving to abolish it essentially. And I know my colleague Minister O'Gorman Roderick, who will be taking over the provision of direct provision in the coming weeks and months, is very keen to do so as quickly as possible. We are trying to put in place as many supports as possible to protect people currently in direct provision, in the same way that we are trying to put in place measures to support people on a national basis as well. And this includes making sure that they feel safe, and that obviously where they need to isolate that they can do so without having to put themselves at harm's
risk. Many of those isolation rooms that we've heard about are in the City West accommodation. The contract runs out with the government and City West in October. Is there a plan beyond that?
Well, certainly if this is something that we need to extend, we will be engaging with them. But, you know, we have made every attempt to put in place safe and secure measures for people in direct provision. And as we've seen with the measures that we've extended in other areas beyond October, this is certainly something if we need to do, we will absolutely do.
Okay, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee, thank you for joining us.